It's J.R. Simmer is back from holiday alongside Hammer. Let's get right to the phones and welcome our TSN Hockey Insider this morning. That would be none other than Dave Poulin, as always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, gentlemen. I was having flashbacks last night to when I first got into the business in 2014, and I did a lot of That's Hockey Tonight, the late night show. And we would go through and do the first rendition of that show at about 11 or 11:30 when the East Coast games were over. Then we had to wait till the West Coast game ended. And it was a 10:30 start in San Jose most nights, and the West Coast teams were all big at that point. And it was going into overtime, and there were more whistles than there were in any other game in the history of hockey, which is what it felt like last night. Like, the 8-minute delay in the first period was one thing, but the ice was slow. The passing on both sides, I think, was a reflection of the ice guys. When I would sit and watch a basketball game in the fourth quarter and then play that night, I mean, the ice looked terrible, and the game was sloppy. But the number of whistles was staggering, and it got later and later. And then it's out of principle, right? Then I'm like, I'm staying up and watching the end. There's no way I'm staying up this late not watching the end. So certainly a happy ending.
And to that, Pooley, is that still impressive from an Ottawa side? I mean, that's a long trip, and on a late Sunday night game, pretty gutsy effort.
No question about it. And, you know, I heard JR talking about the timing of the wins on a trip, and to be able to battle through, you don't know what's going to trigger it for this team. Certainly getting Zoo back is a step, and then get Shabbat back and see them both in the lineup together, and then see what it does to Jake Sanderson, who's carried the mail without those two guys in the lineup, but now gets to settle in a little bit in the third pairing. And 5-on-5, they were good last night, guys. I went through their numbers, you know, at length, and 5-on-5, they were good. And they gave up the two power play goals, both to Kelly Evan. In both situations, one item that is of, I don't know how to quite to address it, because it's not like you're telling the player something they don't know, but the clears on the power play, particularly by the defenseman, has to get better. Has to. It can't be on their tape and not be down 200 feet. I mean, whether you stand on your own goal line and blast it as far as you can down the ice 100 times in practice, but it can't be anything near a soft play on that. That would be a frustration if I were DJ Smith. But once again, it's not like they're not being told not to clear it. They just really struggle in that one simple little thing. And they were, I think, fortunate at the start of the third period. That's where they, you know, came out a little bit back on their heels. But yes, Simmer, I couldn't agree more. On slow ice on a Sunday night when all the other games are done and you're waiting to play and you come out and find a way to get 2 points, you could see the celebration. You could see the energy. That wasn't just a win, guys, and hopefully that propels them into the next series of games.
Mm. You killed penalties your entire career. It was part of your toolkit, as it were. Just on those clears that you talk about, it's often the ones that to go up the boards that aren't shot hard enough or whatever it might be that gets stopped. What is the thinking among most coaches, most players about choosing to try to clear it up the middle of the ice, knowing the risk is if it gets knocked down, you're giving somebody an opportunity in the middle of the ice?
The more license you have, the more you use the whole ice. And I say that when I got to Boston, I played with some good penalty killers in Philadelphia, Mark Howe and Brad Crimmin on the back end, but it might've been my first or second game in Boston. I was standing in front of our own net shorthanded and Ray Bourque put a bullet pass right on my tape. And it shocked me. And I fired it down the ice. And he came off the ice and said, yeah, I'm allowed to use the middle of the ice. And I'm like, yes, you are. But it was as simple as that. And so I think you earn the right to use the whole ice. But high off the glass is still high off the glass. And I don't mean off the boards waist high. I mean high off the glass is still a threat that you are going to eat it if you're, you know, if you're at the top of the power play, that you might get that in the head because it's hard to pick up coming off the glass. And so I think it's something that you prepare for, JR, and it's a mentality that happens before you get the puck. Before you get the puck, you know the second you get it. Now, there's a combination of poise and deliverance here. You have to, you know, you can't pound it into somebody. But if your job is to kill penalties, one of the primary jobs is to be able to fire it 200 feet so no one can touch it.
And you talk a lot, Pooley, about leverage, and that is, to me, one of the weaknesses of the Sens defense. There's not a lot of guys that kill plays that truly do that. Is that also just a sign of simple fatigue? I've battled as hard as I can to actually get the puck, and you can say all you want, but it's not a lack of execution. It's just the energy or trying. The energy's just not there to finish the play.
It might be, certainly, Simmer, and it could also be a case of, you know, now they're getting healthy. And, you know, Zub is better at it than other guys are.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just is. He's better at it. He is stronger on his stick. And strength on stick is a huge, huge factor. Now, I think Jake Sanderson has an excellent stick as well. I think it'll feel its way out now with both Shabbat and Sanderson healthy on how people are being deployed and left rights and you know getting holding out there maybe a little bit later in a kill, and it'll just be more effective use of the personnel if you have all the personnel.
Through the early season struggles, DJ Smith has said very often, almost to the frustration of a lot of fans, of hey, our underlying numbers are really good, you know, at some point our, whether it's luck or however you want to attribute it, it's all got to even out at some point. These last two games, and if we say okay, Anaheim's not very good, and the Sens were full value for the win there. But last night, LA is a good team, right? They were going into the game last night, ninth overall in the NHL standings. Does the fact that Ottawa, you mentioned their 5-on-5 play, 35-24 were the shots 5-on-5 in Ottawa's favor, does that kind of show that, you know, not that they're completely over the hump from early in the season, but maybe that luck or whatever it is starting to even itself out a little bit?
Well, it inevitably does. And, you know, I look at the numbers closely, too. And I remember sitting down with DJ when we were in Philadelphia. So what's that, a couple of weeks ago on a Saturday afternoon? And I had all of my my back numbers, if you will, which we get supplied before the game. And it was staggering, the difference between them and Philadelphia. Staggering. And at that point, Philadelphia might have been four games over 500. And if I'm not, I mean, I might be mistaken, I'm not sure they've won a game since. They're 10 winless, and that could have been the start of it. And we talked about that exact point, JR, is that this has to even out. Well, for Philadelphia, it looked like the world was perfect and rosy, and everything was, you know, all about what they'd done in the offseason and the, you know, their new coach and everything being perfect, and boom, and all of a sudden they're 10 winless in a row. So I'd take the numbers. You have to find a way to translate them into wins. And I will take you to your captain last night on that first goal, guys. That is someone just absolutely overpowering the centerman he's playing against. He's got a shift against Blake Lizotte, and he wins a face-off on his backhand. But you watch the way he manhandles that player on the way to the net to be in position for that short side rebound off the boards. And that's just a guy who – and then he did it again on a play out to Stützle in the first period. It should have been 2-0 behind the net. And so the strength – that Brady Tkachuk shows in that play, and then obviously the pass to DeBrincat. And I thought MJ made an excellent point between periods when he said that's a tool that he wasn't sure that Brady Tkachuk had in his toolbox when he came in the league, and that's the patience. A lot of times, if you think when he got the puck below the goal line, he took a hard step out and tried to jam it in on the short side. In that play, he got the puck, looked, waited, and threaded a perfectly placed pass through right onto the blade of DeBrincat. And so I think your captain's will last night on a couple of occasions really showed through and were rewarded.
In regards to the Kings, Pooley, I've never been bullish kind of on the here and now or the future. Just kind of thoughts on their overall program, because they're another team to me that don't really look at the numbers, and I think their record is a little better than a reflection of the actual club.
I would agree. You know, I like some of the changes they've made, and you look at a shorter term change, and you look at, you know, they drafted a couple guys really high. The Turcotte kid, I think he was fifth overall. And then of course, Quinton Byfield was second overall. The pick before Timmy Stützle, and Turcotte was number five. And those two in particular haven't really turned out and are still kind of, you know, brewing in the minors, if you will. But the Deno trade or Deno signing looks, you know, terrific in the way he is sort of elevated. And it's more the mix of players. Like, they've got some guys that are almost specialists in a weird sort of way. Like the Kaliev that scored the two goals, you know, I remember well from his days when he dominated the OHL, but a lot of it was on the power play. And so, you know, and Kupari, just not quite sure yet. Drew Doughty's still a big part of the mix on the backside. But it, to me, they're still waiting. And then a guy that, you know, Ottawa people are familiar with because he's a native is Brant Clark. So they're still waiting on some of their top picks, I think, to come through. And yet, as you said, they're sitting in the top 10 in the league right now. So I think they're fine with the way they're going right now, the direction they're going in.
Hard to say because we just haven't seen a lot of Quinton Byfield. He's suffered some injuries this year. He's, you know, his progress has been stalled by illness. But, you know, as it sits right now, you're in the American Hockey League. If you are sitting in a management meeting in L.A. or in Ottawa, because that pick came down to L.A. deciding, you know, by all accounts, it was either Byfield or Stützle, and we know the way that it's played itself out. Are you feeling like if you're Los Angeles that you've made a mistake? Or too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell with the big guys. You know, I look at a Tage Thompson, you know, a great big guy who dominated the game because he was so big early. And that's the way Quinton Byfield was in junior, guys. He's just so much bigger than everybody else. So you almost have to relearn how to play the game when you're that size. And let's not forget, Lafreniere went number one in that pick. And the Rangers are still kind of like, you know. So in a way, Ottawa being in the third hole didn't have to choose one of those two guys.
Right.
And you might say, you know, if you're arguably looking at that, I'm a big Lucas Raymond guy, you know, who went fourth overall to Detroit. But if you're looking at that draft, and I know even, you know, a lot of Ottawa fans, when they saw Jamie Drysdale step right in the league and he was the sixth pick in that draft, say, wow, should we have taken Sanderson? But Ottawa may have gotten the two best players in that draft right now, guys, in Timmy Stützle and Jake Sanderson. And, you know, the Sanderson-Drysdale thing, you've got two really good players. And the Stützle-Raymond thing, you've got two really good players. I'm not sure you don't take Stützle and Sanderson in that draft right now.
You just ruined my next question, Pooley. So I will. But I understand with Byfield, and I totally agree. I use that term all the time, untangled. But even after that first World Junior, I had seen enough of, and what concerns me about Byfield is the hockey sense that I felt pretty quickly that, hey, Timmy, and the fact that he moved to the middle, and I don't know if other people had talked about wanting him to be a centerman, I may have, anyways. But don't you, as you said, that's pretty impressive from an Ottawa standpoint, right? Like people always say, oh, you had the high picks. Well, yeah, I mean, franchise altering, right? When you look at that, you look what Philadelphia did in taking Nolan Patrick, you look at, you know, Kotkaniemi to Brady Tkachuk. You have to give Ottawa a lot of credit, both in Tkachuk and those couple of picks, man. It could have been complete different direction for this club had they not hit on those.
There's no question. And by the way, Simmer, with a week off, you've got to have more than one question loaded up for the next question. Okay, but come on. I mean,
we got these 5-hour shows with all the soccer coverage, Dave. So we got to save it.
Our grinder for the week here, and you come in loaded up.
I was on Hockey DB looking at that draft. To be honest with you, that was exactly what I was thinking.
But I think that the hockey sense question is a hard question for some of those guys. And I think it comes into play with Kirby Dach as well in Chicago. You know, they played him with Patrick Kane and decided they weren't sure about his hockey sense. Well, you could play Einstein with Patrick Kane and be not sure about his hockey sense. But it looks just fine in the role they're using him now. So it may be something where LA says, can we employ Byfield in the same way right now that Montreal is employing Dach, where they've unleashed him by putting him on the wing without giving him responsibility of playing center. And he's almost a point-a-game guy, but he's also doing what you want a big guy to do, playing physical, playing along the wall. And they don't have to when they're younger because they're so dominant. And it equates with the lightning-fast skater. If I just skate by you, why do I have to learn how to beat you? And, you know, and so sometimes with the best skaters, it takes them longer. You know, Alex Formanton, you know, Athanasiou, guys that were just with blinding speed, never really had to learn to play the game until they got to the highest level. So I think the jury will still be out with Quinton Byfield. But if you're going back in that draft, and I know people do this all the time, you know, reloading up the draft and seeing how it shakes out. Boy, the number 3 and number 5 picks right now look pretty good. Mm.
We are just past U.S. Thanksgiving. We're at the 20 or 21 game marks. We're at the quarter pole of the season, as you know, the thought always has been. You kind of know what you are by the quarter pole. So in your estimation, you've either done or watched all of the Ottawa games this year. What, in the estimation of Dave Poulin, are the Ottawa Senators?
I think they're a good young club. And, you know, they've been through some injury things that other teams are going to go through. And to keep players at key times, you could say, well, everyone gets injuries. Well, they do. But they might not have, you know, two of their top six defensemen out or two of their top three defensemen out at the same time. And even if it's only for four or five games. And, you know, and they haven't had, I'd like to see a healthy grouping of the goaltending situation here where they really got to play. You know, Talbot got his three in a row, then got a game off, then Forsberg got two, then back to Talbot for two, then Forsberg for three, some sort of rotation. So I think they're a good young club. It may not happen this year for them in the manner that people wanted it to. But I think things are going in the right direction. I think you're seeing individuals. Guys, I am so impressed with Brady Tkachuk. And, you know, we knew Brady brought an element. I'm not sure that people saw the offensive side of this. And if, you know, if they did, so be it. But I'm just not sure they saw the offensive side of this.
He's on pace for 98 points.
You know, 98. Well, you might say the same thing about Matthew, that people didn't see the offensive piece of that either. But boy, oh boy, it is so impressive to watch what's going on with that and, you know, how dominant he is. But you know, as we've already talked about, the rounding out of the game, it's not just in one manner. He's making plays. He's doing things. You know, so that face-off goal that he scores last night, that comes off starting at the center position, you know, on that play and how strong he is on face-offs on that side. And so, you know, I think back to your question, I think this is a good young hockey club. It might not quite be where people want it to be, but there was a mixed feeling coming into the year on where they'd be. Right now, you know, my goal would be the next game, and you're four games under 500 now, and my goal, my quiet goal, like I set quiet goals as a player, and I know you don't want to get ahead of yourself and everything, but I'd be really focused on being 500 at the Christmas break.
Yeah, and I look at that Pooley as well, and I kind of look big picture, all the things off the ice with the franchise. The couple of things in the back of my mind always are, how do you have forward progress after this year if Zub walks out the door? And at the same time, how would you handle the DeBrincat situation? Because as bold of a move that was, the 1 year at $9 million obviously either sets up for a one-year qualifier at nine, a long-term extension, or a trade.
Well, I think when you set that up as the agent, you set that up with Chicago going through transition in mind. And that's not what it is right now. And so you can say what you want about the $9 million qualifier. I'm trying to sign Alex DeBrincat to a long-term deal, and the number's not starting with a nine. It's simply not. And, you know, those are postured for what the situation they're in at that point. He was postured to be one of the leading players on a team that was going to go through transition. When they signed that deal, guys, they knew that Chicago was going south. And that's not where he is right now. And so signing a new contract, I'd be highly interested in making him part of the future going forward. But it would be, you know, a long-term deal, and it wouldn't be starting with a nine.
What would it start with?
I think you have to see how this year plays out.
Yeah.
And I think both the player and the club roll the dice and see how this year plays out. And then I think it starts with something that fits in your salary structure, not in the league salary structure.
Right.
And that's where we talked about the importance of having Brady Tkachuk done at a number. And that is done.
All right. On that note, we'll let you go and appreciate the time and the insight as always. Look forward to chatting with you again on Wednesday.
Have a great day, guys. Thanks.